Live from Burbank, California, a sleepy fishing village off the coast of Maine, it's the Mark Maron Show. And now, he's the deadliest catch, Mark Maron.
Thank you, Jim. Good evening, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives, need machines, and MySpace people. How about you, MySpace people? I'm on there now. I don't know what it means. I'm going to get it all fixed up next week, Jim. I'm going to get it all. I got a guy who's going to do the thing on the thing.
I like MySpace because you get like 5 cents for every time somebody goes on the page.
No, you don't. What the hell are you thinking? You don't get nothing.
I get paid for my MySpace.
Well, good. At least you'll have a future. That's it. The more friends you have, the more future you'll have. I know that I got to put stuff up on the page, information like the fact that I was on Adam Carolla this morning. Would have been nice to let the fans know that I was going to be on the Adam Carolla show here in Los Angeles, hanging out with the fellas who wear baseball hats. You know, those kind of fellas.
Backwards, but just guys.
I was hanging out with guys. Adam Carolla is a fairly well-rounded guy. He's a very pleasant gentleman to talk to.
Yeah.
Had a good time doing the morning radio again. Felt like the old days, putting the cans on at 7, making the juice go woohoo, getting people to work with a decent disposition, all juiced up.
That early in the morning?
Come on, dude. You remember the old days. We used to do it.
Man, that was horrible getting up that early.
Yeah, it was hard getting up, but once you got into the seat, once you got into the saddle and got that engine going, bang, zoom, here we go, live radio. It was cool, though. I had never met Adam Carolla. I don't know why he had me on his show. I'm going to be gracious about it because I had a nice time. He kept me on for a half hour. We ended up talking about drugs, which, you know, I will talk about, but decent conversation.
Recovery? You talked about recovery?
I talked a little bit about not doing drugs.
Yeah.
You know, I talked about how the one of the great things about being sober is how clearly you can see your disappointment. I talked about some of those things, some of my old adages about sobriety. But the bottom line, again, I've got to stop misusing that. I've got to stop doing that bottom line crap. I mean, for half of my career, it was what did I used to say?
The point is.
No, I didn't. Do I say the point is too? I know I say bottom line. I say, you know what I mean? I do that sometimes. You know, I get some you knows going when I'm not sure where I'm going.
And
Not too much of that. I don't do a lot
of. Truth of the matter is.
Truth of the matter. I do a bit of the truth of the matter.
I may make this crystal clear. You did that a lot when you're during the Watergate hearings.
Crystal clear. Yeah, that was one of mine. You're right. But the bottom line. Let me set up the show. We've got a good show. We got a genius on the show. One of the great modern writers of his era. Of his time, of his generation, George Saunders is here. His new book is in Persuasion Nation. Very funny, deep stuff on the page, much like my friend Sam Lipsight, who is a big fan. They're a fan of each other's. I'm in between them in a way because I like both of them, and they know each other, and they respect each other's work, and they're both darkly funny people. Andy Ostroy from ostroy.blogspot.com. This guy has a little blog, an esoteric blog, and I tend to pay attention to it. I don't know why. Met him. I like his little blog.
Mm-hmm.
I like the little pictures he puts up. It's always just like one column, really, but he's doing it because he feels like he has to, and I like having him on the show. Professor Keith Wattenpaw. That's not a joke name. Professor Keith Wattenpaw will be here with his book, Being Modern in the Middle East, Revolution, Nationalism, Colonialism, and the Arab Middle Class. Yeah, that's one of those books you pick up at the bookstore and go, wow, man, some guy knows about this stuff. Maybe I should, what am I thinking? I'm never going to read this book.
I would have shortened that title.
Yeah, well, I tend to read the whole title past the colon. I don't know if that's a protocol or not. I could have just said being modern in the Middle East. I could have just said that. But then there's a colon, the after the colon, and I tend to read that.
I would have called it Boobs in Baghdad.
Boobs in Baghdad.
That
yeah.
Sums the whole thing up to me. Western influence, you know, modern culture.
I
am a genius.
Yeah, being modern in the Middle East revolution. See, I think this book is actually about the 20s and not about the West per se. It's about the evolution of a middle class in the Arab world. You know, after
the 20s.
Yeah,
flappers in Fallujah.
Flappers in Fallujah. Very good. That was very good.
I am hot.
Yeah, yeah. Consumption in Cairo. The disease consumption.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah, it took you a minute. You were about to go, no, what does that have to
do? Yeah,
and then
right.
you went ahead and laughed at it. You gave me one. I'm not unfunny.
I never said you weren't funny.
Oh, Jesus. So what happened to these guns? 200,000 AK-47s have disappeared from a shipment.
Again?
Yeah. Do you know anything about it?
No, I haven't. This is the first I've heard about it. Yeah. You know, the wonderful thing about you is that you bring information that I have no knowledge
of. A 99-ton cache of AK-47s was to have been secretly flown out from a U.S. base in Bosnia, but the four plane loads of arms have vanished. Whoops. I wonder where they went. Maybe I hope they're not in Al-Qaeda's hands. Where the hell is that? Who sold those guns? That's dirty business right there. But don't make any phone calls about it because, as you know, the AT&T, Verizon, and Bell South telephone companies began turning over records of tens of millions of their customers' phone calls to the National Security Administration Agency shortly after the September 11, 2001 attacks. Those calls are not bugged calls. They're just recorded of the calls,
yeah.
But it makes it even creepier.
But they can get all the information.
You want me to do these? All right, look, let's do these, okay?
The jokes?
A lot went on in the world today. A lot of things happened. We don't want you to be caught uninformed or off guard or whatever. This is a Mark Maron Show Short Order News for tonight, the first ones. The National Security Agency has been secretly collecting, as I was just talking about.
Oh, man!
Secretly collecting the phone call records of tens of millions of Americans using data provided by AT&T, Verizon, and Bell South. Alberto Gonzalez defended the program, saying, "We want to know who you're calling so we can put you with your friends in the forced labor camps." Wow. The truth sounds really bad when you say it out loud, doesn't it? When you just say it like
that. Very considerate, though.
According to U.S. Secret Service logs made public yesterday, disgraced lobbyist Jack Abramoff visited the White House twice, once in 2001 and again in 2004. Anonymous insiders say the logs are misleading, as Abramoff often signed in under his code name, Cha-Ching. A McDonald's in Alabama is putting up a bronze bust of Ronald Reagan in its dining room to commemorate the Gipper's 1984 visit. The bust has a commemorative message to McDonald's employees. It reads, quote, "Did you get hip to the fact that trickle-down meant piss on you yet?" End quote. That's the Short Order News from today. Stay with us, my friends. We've got George Saunders coming in here, and he's a deep, funny guy. He's going to read from his book, and he's going to talk about satire and the power of darkness. I hope. I'm going to ask him to.
Now he just lowered his interest level. Mark Maron.
Hey, people, it's a terrific opportunity to celebrate our preferences. I'm not going to explain that. All right, our next guest is going to be appearing. I'm going to say appearing because his writing is engaging and funny. So if he's going to be there reading, it'll be engaging and funny and you should go. I'll tell you where he's appearing in just a second. Let me tell you who he is first. Our guest has been likened to authors like Thomas Pynchon, Kurt Vonnegut, big cryptic funny shoes to fill, I'll say. His books include Civil War Land and Bad Decline, Pastoralia, is that how you say it?
Close enough.
Those are for grown-ups, and then he wrote The Very Persistent Gappers of Fripp for Kids, and the new book is for grown-ups. It's stories, and the name of the book is In Persuasion Nation. Welcome to the show, George Saunders.
Thank you.
How do I say Pastoralia?
You say it, Bruce. Pastoralia.
Pastoralia.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. We just had this weird conversation before about the difference between the word disseminate and seminate.
It's a big difference, and you don't want to mess it up.
Do you know the difference?
Re-inseminate means to get someone pregnant a second time.
Disseminate,
means
though.
To make them unpregnant.
Okay.
Yep.
It means to actually take it back.
Yeah, take it back.
You got to do that quick, and it's tricky. All right. So this book is hilarious. There's a couple of stories in here that are very personal, they're very human, and they're very powerful. And I want to talk about that in a second. But what I really want to talk about is if you could, because you're called a satirist. Now, how does one define satire? Because it seems it's pretty broad.
I never really thought of myself that way until the first book came out, and they started,
throwing that word around?
So now, yeah, I'm that. But I think my feeling about it is it gets called satire because I'm just kind of cranking things up 25% from what it what things actually are, and there's a little bit of political content. And at some point, I think it's just like a riff on human tendencies, you know.
So. If you amplify the dark ones a little bit, but keep them grounded in real, it's dark comedy.
Yeah.
It's what it is, black comedy. You do. It's interesting. You do amplify because I was thinking about the story of My Flamboyant Grandson,
right?
Which is about a grandfather and his grandson. Basically, it's about a kid who's a little in himself and a little effeminate and a little to himself, and they go to New York to see a show.
That's
but
it.
You place it in the future. And you have these what is a very it seems a short stone's throw away of what could be, and yet the humanity of just the story of the kid and his grandfather going to the show is there. Yet there's all this other stuff going on.
Yeah, you know, I think of that stuff as kind of like you know, I grew up in Chicago, so I don't know anything about nature. I can't do nature descriptions. I'm not good at describing rooms. But that pop culture stuff and the kind of quasi sci-fi stuff. That I get. And so when I'm trying to tell, I'm really just trying to tell the story you described about the grandfather and his grandson. But somehow if I keep it in the flat plane, it's a little dull. So I let that other stuff in, and then it kind of comes alive for me. So it's complicated, you know.
Yeah, why don't you tell the audience what are Everly strips and celebrating one's preferences?
Well, the idea is that at this time you're required to have these sort of like zebra stripe kind of things in your shoes.
Yeah.
And as you pass over the sidewalk, that would trigger these holographic advertisements. It would be personalized to you. So, you know, Pamela Anderson would say, "Hey, Mark, why don't you come into Radio Shack?" And,
yeah.
You know, the whole sort of ethos is, of course we would want this. Of course we'd want our preferences to be foregrounded and celebrated. And when this old man fails to do this, they come down on him pretty hard and they correct him.
And he's fined for giving up an opportunity for celebrating his preferences.
That's right.
It's not like Big Brother is watching us. It's Big Brother is watching us, and that's what we pay him for.
Well, and you know, the thing about our culture that's so funny is it's got elements of sort of fascist stuff, but it's always loving, you know, and kind of upbeat and new age. And there's no jackboots. But we're all sort of it's like Walt Kelly said, you know, we've met the enemy and he is us. We kind of like this,
right? And the idea of celebrating one's preferences is the because I thought that what resonated to me about that line is that, hey, what's great about America is choice, man. We have a lot of choices,
right?
And then when you start to use the language of business and of exploiting people's desires, and when you start using words like preferences, which is a questionnaire one fills out,
right,
that you don't even think twice about, and you start thinking about all this information being accumulated about you and identity theft, and then today you get this all these phone numbers and phone interactions that are being stored by the government. I mean, that is not done for our protection, but there's that fine line between doing it for control and doing it for marketing, and is there a difference?
And what somebody's learned somewhere is if you say it nicely enough, Americans won't refuse. Like the other day I was in a hotel, and you know the old do not disturb sign, which is pretty straightforward. It had a picture of this really hot guy, kind of naked from the waist up, lounging in bed, and it says, "Please don't intrude. I'm in heaven." I thought, I'm not putting that on my door. It's like it's misrepresentation. I'm not in heaven. I feel okay, you know. But it was this kind of thing where the corporation is saying to me, "Don't you feel like this?" And of course, it's in their interest for me to feel that way. But it was sort of this weird, you know, low-level propaganda kind of thing.
You talk about the sort of subtle hypnosis of repetition and of marketing themes and how that kind of confuses and infuses our soul. I mean, you've got a story there. Where literally there's a Persuasion Nation has an animated orange candy, a castrated man, a dead grandmother, and one who wants to live in the land of Doritos, even though a giant bag of them just beat their kid to death, and he shows up as well. I mean, and then you have another story where a focus group is portrayed as a slave colony. I mean, this stuff is definitely pulsing through your head, and you're always, this is how you engage with, like, if you sit down and watch TV, what are you thinking usually?
Usually I'm kind of loving it, you know, having fun with it, and just also watching where I'm cringing a little bit, you know, like when they push a button and, you know, where's the thinking, like who thought of that? And to me what's interesting is, you know, when I was younger, you had this whole sensibility that the man was trying to do it to you.
Yeah.
But now you can, like, I know the people that are doing it, and they're talented, and they're hip, and they're young, and they read the same things I read. So the interesting thing is when somebody invents a manipulative commercial, or somebody thinks of this new innovative marketing strategy, it's you. You know, it's us. It's somebody like us. And that, to me, that's why I think I can put them in a book of stories, because there's a moral vector there I haven't figured out yet. I don't really understand it.
I just keep thinking about, why don't we read one? How long do you think it would take to read a segment?
I got a couple little short things if you want.
All right, let's try it. Oh, that's great, great.
This one is from the story Brad Kerrigan, American, and he's it's set on they all live in a TV show.
Right.
And they kind of know it, and they're cool with it. So this is, but these TV shows are used to advertise products within the show. So this is them in the world of the TV show having sort of a news spot hit them. And it's just this guy, Brad Kerrigan, his wife Doris, and their neighbor, Chief Wayne, who's, of course, an Indian.
Yeah, you know. Of course.
Okay. Previously, they never watched other shows on their show. Plus, they have so many TVs now, two per room, plus a backyard TV, plus one at either end of the garage, so that wherever they go, some portion of another show is always showing. On Final Twist, five college friends take a sixth to an expensive Italian restaurant, supposedly to introduce him to a hot girl, actually to break the news that his mother is dead. This is the initial twist. During dessert, they're told that, in fact, all of their mothers are dead. This is the second twist. The third twist is, not only are all their mothers dead, the show paid to have them killed. And the fourth and final twist is, the kids have just eaten their own grilled mothers. What a riot, says Doris. Doris, come on, says Brad. These are real people, people with thoughts and hopes and dreams. Well, nobody got hurt, says Chief Wayne. Except those kids who unknowingly ate their own mothers, says Brad. Well, they signed the releases, says Chief Wayne. Releases or not, Wayne, come on, says Brad. They killed people. They tricked people into eating their own mothers. I don't know that I'm all that interested in the moral ins and outs of it, says Chief Wayne. I guess I'm just saying I enjoyed it. It's interesting. That's the thing, says Doris. The expectations, the reversals, the timeless human emotions. Who wouldn't want to watch that, says Chief Wayne. Interesting is good, Brad, says Doris. Surprising is good.
There you go.
Yeah.
George Saunders is our guest. The book is In Persuasion Nation. You use a violent imagery as comedic kind of. I don't want to get too intellectually pretentious sounding.
Oh, go
but,
ahead.
Well, I found it pretty effective, and I think that is a pretty traditional satire tool is to take it up to make it graphic and gooey and full of blood and
right.
guts, and I think it's very effective in that one I was talking about with the several different TV commercials that unfold as TV commercials. You know, two or three of them end up in one ends up in castration, one ends up with the guy's head getting crushed. But you're talking about riffs on mainstream commercials.
Right.
And I think what we were talking about before, I'd like to continue after the break for a couple minutes, is that there's this idea that because talented and creative people are involved in this process of selling, that somehow allows them a pass. And I'm not sure that it should. Right. Do you want to talk about that in a minute?
Well, yeah, definitely.
All right, well, hang out. We're talking to George Saunders. The book is In Persuasion Nation. He's in Los Feliz tonight. At Skylight Books over there on 1818 North Vermont Avenue. So, what time is that? 7?
7:30, I think.
Okay, we'll get it straight in a second. Hang on.
Now he's putting something in your food. Mark Maron.
Thank you, Jim. Jim Earle, little Jimmy Earle. Our guest is George Saunders. The book is In Persuasion Nation. He will be reading and signing books tonight at Skylight Books in Los Feliz here in the Los Angeles area up on Vermont. Very nice bookstore. It's a nice area, too. It's got good restaurants and everything you need. So before we went to the break, we're talking about this idea of creative, talented people. I had a guy on yesterday from McSweeney's, and they do this new DVD magazine. I'm sure you'll be involved at some point.
I hope so.
Yeah, those they've published your stuff.
Yeah,
they're good folks.
They're great folks.
But there's certain people for some reason that could do commercials and somehow be hipper than the commercial.
Right.
Like I did one commercial because it came to me out of nowhere and I needed the dough.
Right.
And I never auditioned for commercials. I have a certain amount of integrity around it. I've never done anything that I didn't try to do it, and I did it, and I still felt dirty.
Yeah.
Now, what do you make of that collusion of art and commerce? I think it's somewhat unforgivable sometimes.
It's a huge question, and I'm kind of trying to work through it because it's for what I do, fiction, you've got the nice advantage that you don't need anything. You don't need any money, really. You just need a pencil, basically.
Yeah.
And I've also been thinking about this idea that basically the commercial impulse is not, you know, de facto unholy, you know. I mean, that's kind of what we do. We buy stuff, you know, and we gather stuff. And I think where now it's weird is that the products of that process are so beautiful sometimes and funny and rich and kind of aesthetically on par with actual artistic things, but they're still a hidden agenda. They're still done by a committee. So they're these kind of manipulative things that are really, really beautiful, which is confusing, you know. So personally, I mean, as a writer, I mean, no one's asking me, you know, but
right.
But it does, to me, the troubling thing is when you look at who's still in our heads these days, where are we getting our stories from? Usually it's out here, it's a committee,
yeah.
And the committee has got a different agenda than, say, Tolstoy did,
sure.
Which is to get over. I had a talk here one time with a movie guy about 10 or 12 years ago, and I said, how does Richie Rich Part 6 get made?
Yeah.
And he said, well, you got all these people who have a dream of making The Grapes of Wrath or some great movie, but they know they got to get in the game, so you go to get in the game by doing Richie Rich, and you say to yourself, when I really arrive, then I'll get my integrity back. But I'm not sure that comes back once you give it away.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think you get that your ability to rationalize things, that your ability to compromise your conscience about what you might have thought was your ideal at one time becomes even more.
You bet. Yeah.
Yeah. But I guess what I'm hearing you say is that on some level, there's nothing wrong with embracing things if they're beautiful and you have put them in check in your head and you understand them.
Well, I'm not sure because I think that's true, but then I look at like the run-up to the war in Iraq, for example,
sure.
And I know, I'm not smart enough to articulate, but I know that there's a relationship between the thing our national attention did with OJ and Monica, and that we got a little dumber and a little more soundbitey, and then suddenly we're sold this massive bill of goods. And in my mind, there's got to be a relation between, you know, the rise of that kind of entertainment as news and reality shows and all that, and then this other kind of weird thing that happened. And I haven't fully articulated, but I know there's a relation.
You mean what emotions it molds within the communal psyche?
Exactly. And
right.
Yeah, and what do you allow? And to what extent do you say, well, that's not my business? You know.
Well, I think you covered in your story. I think the Red Bow is about that, if I'm not mistaken. That you deal on a community level with an outbreak of a animal-borne disease and that community's reaction to it, led by a guy who is really, for all practical purposes, not a very good guy, mm-hmm. not a very good father, but saw the moment and seized it to exploit the people's fear and lead them in a questionable direction.
Right.
And I think that the way he did that by being fraudulent, by twisting the truth, is exactly how it happens on a broader level, only it's not a red bow. You know, it's a lie that makes people right. afraid.
And the thing that I found interesting was that's actually taken a positive emotion, which is the, you know, what we all felt after 9/11, that kind of stunned, deeply sad feeling. And it's just a slight turn of the dial to go from that, which could have led to a kind of transcendent moment, you know, of kind of understanding of suffering and stuff, and it became kind of vengeful and aggressive. But it's taken the very authentic energy of grief and then kind of subverting it in a way. So that's exactly what that's
subverting story. It to control people, to take advantage of that fear.
Or, you know, I mean,
grief.
If you're being generous, you know, that moment in Fahrenheit 9/11 when they show the president at the school, I mean, Moore kind of reduces that to this joke. But if you look at the look on Bush's face, that's Shakespearean, you know. He's afraid. He's guilty. He's about a million different things. And to me, it's kind of beautiful to think that everything that happened since came out of that moment of what I would call true perplexity, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to foster like a generous attitude toward him within very, you know, stingy parameters, but to say that was an amazing moment. It was badly fumbled after that and is still being fumbled, but in that moment it was pretty authentic and profound, you know. And in the same way in that story, the death of the kid in the story is a big deal, and that emotion is real, and then it gets sort of
twisted
tragically.
By somebody who has either a conscious agenda or an unconscious one.
Right.
I think that's what we're talking about, too, in relation to advertising and everything else.
Right.
There are people that have that think three steps ahead, that are political beings, that are not just reacting in a survival mode, that are actually, scheming.
Well, see, that you put your finger on it, because I think the problem is that, you know, the class discussion has kind of gone by the wayside, but if you think about the people running the country, and really you'd have to say in politics, entertainment, all across the board, what they have in common is a lot of time to conceptualize.
Yeah.
And a lot of reinforcement that their concepts actually have something to do with the real world. So you get a war like this one, which is all conceptual. Nobody was imagining a three-dimensional Baghdad.
Right.
But, you know, it was all concepts from think tanks and so on. These guys who really haven't been in our world in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So they go out there and they play their conceptual games, and I think that's really where it gets tragic and scary.
Well, that's thank God you're a writer and can use your conceptualization to create this great fiction that reveals these moral quandaries of humanity. I really enjoy your writing. I think we have time if you want to read a couple of those commercials In Persuasion Nation. This is George Saunders. He'll be appearing tonight at Skylight Books in Los Feliz, 1818 North Vermont Ave at 7:30. And this is from that title story, right?
Right. This came out of the idea that in a lot of commercials, the corporations are taking credit for things that they didn't do, you know. So, and there's a kind of meanness. An orange and a slap of whack bar sit on a counter. I have vitamin C, says the orange. So do I, says the slap of whack bar. I have natural fiber, says the orange. So do I, says the slap of whack bar. You do? Says the orange. Are you calling me a liar? Says the slap of whack bar. Oh no, says the orange politely. I was just under the impression from reading your label that you are mostly composed of artificial colors, an innovative edible plastic product, plus high fructose corn syrup, so I guess I'm not quite sure where the fiber comes in. Slap it up your whack, shouts the slap of whack bar, and sails across the counter, jutting one pointy edge into the orange. Oh, God, the orange says in pain. You've got an unsightly gash, says the slap of whack bar. Do I have an unsightly gash? I think not. My packaging is intact, weakling. I have 0 calories of fat, says the orange weakly. So do I, says the slap of whack bar. How can that possibly be the case, says the orange in frustration. You're comprised of 80% high fructose corn syrup. Slap it up your whack, shouts the slap of whack bar, and sails across the counter and digs its edge into the orange over and over, sending the orange off the counter and into the garbage can, where it's leered at by a perverted-looking chicken carcass and 2 evil empty cans of soda. Now you have 0 of 0 of 0, says the slap of whack bar. The slap of whack bar, says the voiceover, for when you're feeling wacky. This is, I think, your favorite. Two best friends look at their penises under sophisticated microscopes. You call this elongated, says one man. Jim, I gained 4 inches, says the other. Perhaps you should try my brand. What is your brand, Kevin, says the other. My brand is I hang a brick from my penis and stand for hours at the edge of the Grand Canyon, says Kevin. Okay, Kevin, says Jim. You've been my dearest friend since kindergarten. I'll give it a try. Then we see Jim standing on the edge of the Grand Canyon, brick hanging from his penis, while Kevin tiptoes toward Jim's car and a voiceover says, Pontiac Sophisto, so sophisticated it might just make you trick your best friend into dangling a brick from his penis. While Jim is distracted by the pain of the brick on his penis, Kevin squeals away in Jim's Sophisto. As Jim spins around to look, his penis rips off and plummets into the Grand Canyon. Jim smiles wryly, acknowledging Kevin's trick but also Kevin's good taste in cars, then starts down into the Grand Canyon to retrieve and, hopefully, reattach his penis.
Yes!
Literature!
Thank you so much, George
Saunders.
Thank
you very much.
Have a great reading. The book is In Persuasion Nation. If you're in the L.A. area, Skylight Books tonight at 7:30 in Los Feliz. Great talking to you.
Thank you, too.
Stay tuned for another revealing phone call from closet liberal Lawton Smalls.
Now, just like butter, Mark Maron.
Thanks, Jim.
You're welcome.
That George Saunders fellow was certainly enjoyable to talk to.
Oh, yeah.
He's buddies with my friend Lipsight.
Technical Sam. Writer, former technical writer and geophysics engineer.
You would love his stuff. You got to read it. I've got a couple of his
books.
You
know what he has in common with his influence? Nikolai Gogol and
who?
Probably what? Bulgakov and Zamyatin. All technical writers or doctors.
See, this would have been great to bring up when he was here.
Well, I was sending singles.
Okay, all right. You were?
No.
Oh. All right, I've been reading the Ostroy Report for over a year now. Andy Ostroy is an astute political observer, but more than that, he's just a guy that wanted to make a difference and started doing his blog and a public TV show, the Ostroy Delay Report, where Democrats play rough. That's on in New York City. He just wants to change, and also he wants to apparently be a media star. Thanks for being here, Andy.
Thank you for that lovely intro, Mark. That yes, on my way to have a voice, as they say.
Yeah, I remember the first time I did your TV show. I'm like, who gets this show? And you're like, there's a guy named Joe who gets it.
And don't forget my grandmother.
And then my grandma gets it. And I'm like, why don't I just come down to the studio? You're like, there's really no room here.
Yeah, believe it or not, people actually do watch the show. We go on the air at the exact same time as the network news shows.
Uh-huh.
And we get a lot of calls and people watching and calling, and it never ceases to amaze me that people are watching us versus the networks. And I think it speaks to something out there, not that I'll tell you what it doesn't speak to. It doesn't speak to me being a tremendous network media star. It speaks to the fact that
people like reality television.
They like reality TV, exactly. And they're not getting reality from the network.
That's right.
So they're certainly not seeing Democrats play rough on the network. So we try to give them a little bit of that.
Who does all the little artwork on your column? Usually, who does the cut and pasties?
Let me run through my staff. That would be me.
Those are really clever. They're good. They're funny.
Yeah.
So let's talk about Roe.
Thanks to Google.
Yeah, let's talk. Yeah. Oh, you just move things
you
around.
You go to Google Images and you'd be majorly surprised what comes up.
And do some fun. Well, let's talk about Roe first off. I read the column and you think that his tactics are wearing thin, that his devices are apparent, and that he's become a liability?
I think so.
How so?
I really think after reading. Look, I wrote on my blog a few weeks ago that taking him away from policy and putting him on politics is going to be extremely frightening for the Democrats. And I've done an about face on that because in the last week he's come out with his game plan, and it's really just a retread of the same old tired rhetoric about the war on terror and national security and a whole litany of what, unless I'm in a dream here, a whole litany of failed Republican agenda issues.
Talking points, right.
Tax, health. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't understand how if this is his strategy to run on these things, he's going to hand this election to us on a silver platter.
Well,
doesn't mean the Democrats are not going to try to screw it up, which they...
I hope we're not getting too cocky. And also, I was very excited last night. I was listening to Tom Hartman subbing for Sam and Janine, and he came up with something that I had talked about on my show, and I always it makes me happy when I find that I do have some speculative powers in terms of understanding politics, that this commitment that George Bush has made to defending the war and being stubborn to hold on to that 31% of those delusional people is really going to function as a political device for Republicans to run against him if they need be in their districts. And the same with the immigration thing, I think. I don't know if you agree with me that if a Republican is running in a jingoistic, racist district, why not support Sensenbrenner's approach? If they're not, why not support George Bush's approach? They've left a lot of open opportunities.
Yeah, I mean, the Republicans, the incumbents running for off re-election, they've started distancing themselves from Bush a long time ago.
Yeah.
And I think, the news that came out this week from Rove in terms of what his plan is and how he's contacting all these guys and saying, here's the strategy. Let's talk about the war on terror. When, the reality is two-thirds of the country believes the war was a mistake. The Times CBS poll shows that people believe that Democrats would handle the Iraq war better. There's been more acts of terrorism throughout the world on Bush's watch. We still have Bin Laden, al-Zarqawi, and Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, Al-Qaeda's three musketeers on the loose. The CIA is in a state of chaos, so the intelligence community has to be suffering there. Let's not forget the Dubai ports deal and Rove's impending, let's hope, Rove's impending indictment. I mean, if they're running on national security and the war on terror and with that record, I just don't see. I can't imagine that that's not a tremendous opportunity for Democrats.
Right, and every Democrat ought to be saying what you're saying.
And I know. Unbelievable.
And also, Dean and I think Pelosi kind of pulled back a little bit from talking about impeachment proceedings because we know that if the Democrats take back the House, that is a high possibility that those will begin. But they don't want to start saying that because they don't want to give Rove the ammunition to run on, like, they're just going to impeach him. That's all they care about. They're crazy impeaching Democrats.
Yeah, and, the Democrats have to develop some nads here. It's not just the Republicans messing up. It's the fact that Democrats, I mean, you look back to the 2004 election.
Yeah.
And there's things you wish John Kerry said. One of them would have been, if I was John Kerry, I would have said, hey, George, Dick, I know where I was in Vietnam. I know what medals I was collecting. Where were you two clowns? Now, the Democrats don't want to go down that road. They like to be politically correct. They like to be above the fray. But they've got to get down and dirty and call things as they are. So I think you're right, Mark. If the Democrats stand up and say and point to all of these things, point to the failures in the war on terror, point to the debacle in Iraq, point to the fact that the Social Security reform effort that the Bushies tried to put through was a joke, that health care costs are skyrocketing and more people are on that don't more people don't have coverage than ever before. These are the kinds of things that they're just there for the taking.
And they're spying on us.
Drive that home.
They're spying on us, and they're giving tax breaks to the rich. The list goes on. You're absolutely right, and I hope that it happens. Talk about a little bit before we run out of time. What's your distract them in 06 plan?
Oh, thanks for asking. I love this. And I have to give some credit to my good friend Adrian, who helped with the concept, and I took off with it. But we call this Distract the Bastards 06.
Okay.
And basically what we want to do is come up with our plan to match what the Republicans did in 04 by getting people to go to the polls to vote on gay marriage amendments. So this, what Distract the Bastards 06 basically is a concept to get Republicans away from the polls. And how do we do that, Mark? We conduct all kinds of nationwide fun things for Republicans, like free NASCAR jacket giveaways in Virginia, all-day hunting contests in Texas, where we give away big prize money, free all-you-can-eat religious-themed barbecues in Ohio. We'll have carnivals all over the country in Georgia, Mississippi, Alabama, with surefire enticements like Dunk the Gay Guy booths and redneck versus abortionist paintball matches. We'll even take them to Indian reservation casinos in Nevada and Arizona and Wyoming. Give them buckets of nickels so they can sit at the casino at the slots all day. This way, by the end of the day, they'll be so bloated and drunk and exhausted they won't even want to vote.
I think it's a good plan.
Yeah, and you know, we do this as a grassroots thing. We just got to spread the message.
Yep.
So we're gonna see where we can go with this.
So it's
Distract the Bastards 06.
Yes, encourage those Democratic business owners that can to step up and help make some of that happen.
Absolutely. We're gonna need lots of donations of various pork products. So we're gonna need some help.
So I also noticed on your blog that you came up with some info that that Gore can pretty much wait till the last minute to get into the game because he can afford it.
Yeah, I was actually kind of surprised to see that myself, that Gore is apparently a major investor in Google. And as we all know, Gore had some affiliation to the creation of the Internet.
Didn't he invent it single-handedly?
Well, that's what the Republicans say. It's actually not quite, believe it or not, what Al Gore says, but it's what the Republican folklore will have. But he apparently, according to inside Gore sources, friends of Gore, that he has so much dough that he can pretty much announce his candidacy at the very last minute and just blow the doors off of everyone. So,
I just saw a short film by Spike Jonze on him. It was very touching. Have you seen that?
But I do believe, I'm very passionate, as you know, about Al Gore.
I know.
And I think, I can't escape the fact that the guy basically won under much different times.
I think you're right.
Make it easier for him.
Well, thank you, Andy. It was great talking to you again.
Likewise, and hope to speak to you soon.
Okay. Take Andy care. Ostroy at the ostroyreport.blogspot.com. You can link to it at markmaron.com. Talk to you in a minute.
Now he listens to your phone conversations and the voices in your head. Mark Maron.
All of them. And mine. All of them. So, that's actually right on the front page of our next guest's blog. It's nice when a blogger gets a scoop. It's even better when they come on my show to talk about it. I personally just got hip to bradblog.com. Brad Friedman is here to break some news and talk about some other stuff. Welcome to the show, Brad.
Thank you. You just got hip. Where you been?
Dude, I don't know where the hell people get the time. I know you do Ed Schultz's show. I know you've been on Stephanie's show. I know you make the rounds here at Air America. And I do recognize I've been to Brad Blog once or twice when I had sedition, but I just don't know where the hell people get time. I thank God that there are diligent, obsessive, compulsive people like yourself out there doing the big work. But So let's talk about first of all, let's break this news because my booker was all excited. Let's talk about Ann Coulter and what you got on her.
Everyone loves Ann Coulter, don't they?
Oh, sure.
They love her.
For
they
the
love
wrong
to
reasons.
Hate her.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, interesting story about Ann Coulter, and it's kind of cool because it combines a couple of the things that I report on a Brad blog, this election stuff, and then these crooks and liars, frankly,
sure.
like Coulter. Turns out our friend Ms. Coulter seems to have committed a voter fraud felony.
For real?
For real.
And like, is that jail time felony kind of thing?
Let's see. She, it's a $5,000 fine and up to 5 years in prison.
Explain it.
She signed her voter registration form down in Palm Beach, where she recently moved in March of 05. She, it's the most twisted story. She put down the address on her voter registration form of her real estate agent.
Uh-huh.
Which is not her own, and then she signed at the bottom, there's an oath that says, I swear that, you know, the above is true under penalty of law and a $5,000 fine and up to 5 years in prison.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, since she got caught, well, she actually went and voted.
Right.
She went to what she thought was her precinct, and they said, oh, I'm sorry, Ms. Coulter, your address is wrong. You need to vote at this other place, according to your form, but we can change your address here. She said, oh, no, that's okay, thanks. And she rushed out. And she went over to the other precinct to cast her vote.
Now is this devious intent, or is it just confusion? I mean, I don't understand. Is there a conspiracy? What do you think is the reason?
You know what? It's the most bizarre thing. Now, because these Republicans have tried to morph the very real problem that we have in this country with election fraud, with these electronic voting machines, to suggest that there is some enormous voter fraud problem in this country. There is not. There is no epidemic of voter fraud, and yet they're using this to try to get these photo ID requirements all over the country, which will disenfranchise millions of, frankly, left-leaning voters. So for Coulter, then, to come out herself and specifically and knowingly vote in the wrong precinct just helps us underscore what a bunch of phonies these jerks are, specifically Coulter.
And everything she represents.
In case you didn't notice,
Well, now, we had a conversation on the break that I think is an interesting conversation because you are diligent in your following of the Diebold stories of the problems with these voting machines. And there is always a question, I've received it myself when I did Morning's Edition, of why aren't you guys doing this every day? Why aren't we hearing more about these Diebold machines every day? How are we going to get fair elections if you guys don't talk about it?
Yep.
And you said to me that, you know, that there are other personalities on the network that don't talk about it. Some talk about it profusely.
Yeah.
And I think one of the reasons is a perception issue that some people, if they keep hearing about the problems with the voting boxes and they feel the futility of manifesting any solution to those things, they start to think that the people that are talking are whack jobs. It's easy to look like a whack job when you talk about it.
It is, unless you pay attention to the way, at least to the way I report it at bradblog.com. Every claim that I make, every claim is backed up with evidence, documentation, like this Ann Coulter story we're talking about. I've got the documents. I've got the incident report of her leaving the precinct and her registration form I've got posted, the letter that was sent from the elections director.
And there's also the idea that, if I can just interrupt you, that if that there's always been a voter election fraud of some kind on both sides.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's easily a lot more easy to facilitate it with these machines, but in the past, they've always rigged these things.
Listen. We were talking in the past, we were talking about retail fraud, where you had to go in and game a ballot box, put a few, you know, 100 paper ballots or something here or there.
Okay.
What we're talking about now and what is going on now is wholesale election fraud, a single person. And mind you, can game the entire system, can flip an entire election. And again, when you talk about, you know, this crazy conspiracy stuff. When I report this story, I point you to, for example, the branch of the Department of Homeland Security, August 31, 2004, puts out a cybersecurity alert warning everyone. It's a branch of the Homeland Security, okay? Saying that the Diebold central tabulator system has an undocumented backdoor.
I remember
which can
that.
Be used
sure.
to flip. Well, you only remember it, frankly, because I reported it a few months ago. That damn thing was not picked up by a single mainstream media outlet for a year and a half. After it was reported by the Department of Homeland Security. No one picked it up. I pointed to it a year and a half later, well after the election, because I was pointed to it by a Diebold insider who is anonymous.
Who's the woman that was championing this, who I talked to before, that
Bev Harris. Bev Harris, blackboxvoting.org.
Yeah.
They've been all over this stuff.
These are very important things, and I don't consider it a conspiracy theory. I know that it is most likely true. I know that there are people working diligently to try to get these machines out of circulation, but could these machines... The argument with people who believe that it's always going to be corrupt, that the political process in this country is always going to be corrupt, is that, well, if there was a landslide, it would be undeniable. Now, theoretically, what you're saying to me is that this could deny a landslide.
This is so severe. As a matter of fact, we have just now found, and I broke this last Friday, something that is such a severe deficiency specifically in the Diebold touchscreen machines in every state and every county. Pennsylvania, who has elections next Tuesday, has now locked down every Diebold touchscreen machine that they have. This ran this morning on AP, in case you think it's just, you know, the crazy bloggers who are reporting it, and most of them aren't. It's largely me and a few others. They reported this morning, AP, that this is a serious national security concern. A serious one. This is the worst flaw, vulnerability that we have found. In exactly 1 minute, anyone can walk up and change the software on any Diebold touchscreen machines. This is the year, 2006, that the Help America Vote Act of 2002 now kicks in, and these machines... made by Diebold, ES&S, their evil twin, are now proliferating the country. These aren't tested. They have vulnerability after vulnerability. Forget 2004. Forget if anybody has ever used them to defraud an election. The fact that they can, it's undeniable. Diebold has now admitted it time and time again. And elections all over the country are now in crisis, panic mode. Those who have had their primaries had complete meltdowns, and those who are going to are scared to death because the machines need to be sequestered, now, as we saw in Pennsylvania.
Some states have had success in getting rid of these machines. Yes, there has been some success in California. Didn't some districts get rid of these machines? Isn't there a movement to get rid of them?
What happened was, out here in California, the Secretary of State, when he heard about these vulnerabilities that were proven, undeniable, he put his own security analysis team on it, and they came back and they said, yep, there is that problem, plus we found 16 more that are more dangerous than the one that you guys pointed us to, than this hack that took place in Leon County, Florida. And so Bruce McPherson, Secretary of State, said, that's great. Let's go ahead and certify them.
Yeah.
So he did.
I guess we'll know, unfortunately, in 2006, come November, we'll know if Catherine Harris wins that the fix is still in.
Well, you may or you may not know, because what we've discovered is the devices that can flip the election and not a trace will be left behind. Yeah. That's what I have to underscore. Unless these damn things are audited open for inspection, you will never know, Mark.
So without a paper trail and without a guy sitting there with a clicker, that we got no way to prove this.
Well, you do have a way to prove it, because if you audit the elections in a large enough size that you can make sure that the machine counts were correct, you can find it out. But in the state of Florida, where we did this hack recently in December of 2005, completely flipped the vote, on optical scanners. This was with a paper ballot. They would have never found out in Florida, because Florida has now made a law that says once a ballot has been counted by machine, it cannot be counted by hand. Had they counted it by hand, they would have found out the election was flipped. But it's illegal now in the state of Florida.
You know, it's amazing. I just realized why a lot of people don't talk about this.
Why?
Brad Friedman from bradblog.com, is that it makes them hopeless.
Well.
And I think that there's no reason to stifle truth because of that.
Well, if you don't talk about it.
I'm with you.
I know.
I want you to talk about it. I want something to be done about it. I want people on election boards to do something about it. But I know why people don't talk about it. Because they don't feel like they have the power to change, and they feel that if that's the case, it diminishes their ability to have any faith in the damn system. So unless people do what Jim Earl says they will, which is get out in the streets and start mobilizing to change this thing, to really change minds and to really get people to take action around this in numbers that will make a difference, I don't know what the hell's going to happen.
But until the Democratic Party and the, look, even Air America, Franken, Franken won't talk about this stuff until he gets out there and says, look, you know, I've talked to this Brad Blog guy, and he knows his stuff, and he's got the details, and we need to be damn concerned about it, you know, where these people are not going to show up. Now, we've had citizen patriots all around the country who are paying attention, and they're going into the Board of Election and the Secretary of State, and they're raising hell. But until the National Democratic Party...
You're expecting them to do something?
Oh, well, I met with Feingold last week.
Okay, he's a guy. That's good. Feingold's one of the guys. Yeah. But, you know, some of them are starting to show up with a little guts. You know, Harry Reid is starting to come around. Yeah. There are people that are willing to take some stands. You know, I think, if we get the House back, but if what you're saying is true, the chances are diminished just on a technological basis.
Yes, and all these issues you could talk about, all these damn issues you want.
Right.
But they don't mean anything if you can't vote the bums out. And if we don't have confidence in our security, never mind the fraud that's happened in the past, if we don't have confidence in the security of these systems, and there's no reason to right now, then you're not going to vote these guys out.
Thank you very much, Brad Friedman, bradblog.com. There you go. That is the message. Let's run with it. I'm going to have you come back every week and say the same thing.
I will be here every week, my friend.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
What do we got? We got funny coming, right? Please tell me we got funny coming around the corner. Yeah? Okay, good. Lawton on the phone. Lawton Smalls.
And now, save time and postage. Mark Maron.
Forget it. There's no hope. The machines... There's no hope. We're not going to ever win. It's over, man.
The machines are against us.
It's over, man. They're rigged. You can just, if you run your credit card through it, you can make Bush president for the rest of time. Oh, it's awful, those damn machines. Since our president is, and I'm serious, I'm not trivializing that. It is. It's just like very frustrating. Since our president is openly operating in a different reality, we think it's important that listeners know what's going on in his alternate universe. Luckily, we have a staffer who lives in that world. So here now is our very own Planet Bush Bureau Chief, Lawton Smalls. Hello, Lawton.
Hello, Mark. Hey, God's about to speak. Turn off your cell phones and pagers.
Oh, you're in a good mood, man. That always worries me.
Oh, Mark, yeah. Planet Bush High School has asked me to give the commencement address. I am so blessed. You know, unlike you lib floppers, conservatives believe in giving back to the community. Can I read my speech to you? I need an audience.
Oh, man. Do I have to?
Oh, come on, Mark. Come on. I'd listen to yours if they asked you to speak at the faux beatnik beard and bong hit club.
All right. But how about just the highlights? Is that all right? Just give me the highlights.
Here it goes.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, distinguished faculty, class of 2006, and Jesus.
Mm.
It's an honor to be here today. It's just such a blessing to see all your smiling faces. That means your mothers didn't butcher you in Hillary-approved partial birth abortions after meth-fueled orgies with strung-out rent boys, or blocked your father's precious seed through contraception, which, let's face it, is the whore's way out.
Oh, that's a real grabber there, Lawton.
You
good.
Like that?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, good.
Seeing you all out there, I'm reminded of my own graduation day. So proud in my cap and gown and my white pleather belt and matching shoes. My genitals strapped down with ace bandages to punish the sinful stirrings in my loins.
Oh.
Why, it seems like yesterday.
Whoa. Wait, back up. I don't think I needed to know that. I mean, all right. Well, just move forward, please.
Too much?
Yeah, I think so. It's a little disturbing.
All right, I got more. Here we go. Today, you reach a crossroads. So many tough decisions to make. Now, down one path is college. I have one word for you there. Don't! Mm. State-sponsored college is an Osama bunker full of elitist surrender monkeys, America-hating secular humanists, gay agenda shock troops.
Mm.
I mean, one minute you're a smiling youngster full of the Holy Spirit, and the next minute you're sharing a pup tent with five lesbian English TAs and a two-gallon jug of Gallo Chianti reading Rambo and listening to Slater Kinney. That's college for you, people! After 4 years and thousands of dollars, what do you have? Herpes.
Well, yeah,
that's it.
That sounds about right, Lawton. Only for me, it was the Velvet Underground was the band. Yeah.
All right, but children,
there's
another path.
Okay.
The right path.
Oh, boy.
The path of George W. Two Terms Mandate Bush. And like him, It's clean and strong and heterosexual, but only for procreation. Committed to God and His holy sturch.
And to
church
be,
state,
and
sturch. Yeah, learn it, use it.
I know what sturch. It is. I know the sturch. I get it. And how about to the incompetence and cronyism and war? Where's
I'm
that
letting
stuff?
That go.
Where's
on this path? I got more. On this path, you have lots of choices. You can go to a heck of a fundamentalist college and make lasting friendships with people of faith who also go to churches that look like malls. Or you could join the military and help with our glorious liberation of Iraq from their tin-pot Muslim God.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can go right into the workplace. President George W. two-terms mandate Bush's tax cuts guarantee you'll get a high-paying, satisfying job right away.
You want fries with that?
All right, buddy.
You see what I'm saying? You want fries with that? That's the kind of job you're looking at. What the hell are you talking about?
All right, I gotta finish this up. Thanks to this president, your future is filled with hope. And tomorrow is as bright as...
What's going on, Martin? What's going on? I didn't even yell at you.
Kids are screwed, Martin!
Yeah.
Steve's screwed and tattooed!
Yep.
I got nothing to look forward to but debt and war and brown air and $6 gas.
Yep.
They should all move to freaking Canada, Mark.
Mm-hmm.
Just get a big ass U-Haul and get the hell out of this dump.
Mm-hmm.
Hasta la vista, America. It was fun while it lasted. Bye. This is American Pie.
Oh, no.
Tell my Chevy to the left.
All right. All right. Take it easy. Go out and please. All right. These things are screwed up, but we're going to get through it, man. We're going to get through it, Lawton. Please. Just pull it together.
We'll get through it?
Yes. Yes.
You really mean that?
Well, not really, but just breathe, okay? Just breathe and take it easy. That's a hard one. Wow.
So, what'd you think of my speech, huh?
Oh.
I think the kids are going to love it. I have a God-given talent for connecting with the young people.
I don't know what. I don't know what. Goodbye. Goodbye. Good luck with it.
God loves you, class of 2006. Deal with it.
All right. We'll be back in a second. Stay with us. Mark Maron Show.
Crumbs everywhere. Mark Maron.
I'm going to Vegas tomorrow, dude.
So you have some sort of weird gig.
I got a gig. I'm nervous about it. I haven't been to Vegas in a million years. I'm not a Vegas guy. I don't do the Vegas thing. And
you gonna wear a suit?
Oh, maybe I will.
Medallions and all that kind of crap. Is your wife going? Is Misha going?
Yeah. Medallions?
Yeah. It's Vegas. It's real slick and show busy there.
What year of Vegas are you referring to in your weird head?
It's not like Vegas has really modernized in the last 38 years. I mean, it's all really? Pretty much the same crap, isn't it? I mean,
are you serious?
Yeah, I mean, it's
that's huge now. You used to just be one hotel in the desert, maybe a couple, strip. Now it's huge. It's huge. It's like
Ed Begley would not approve of Vegas.
Look, I'm doing it because I got offered this opportunity. My wife's going out with me. She's going to open the show. It's going to be strange. It's at the Palms, or the Palm, the big hotel, big fancy hotel. Playboy sponsors the gig, so it's going to be hosted by a Playmate. It's just so not
who else
really
is on
my
the,
world.
Who else is on the bill?
My wife and another guy. I don't know. I should put it up on my site. I should advertise these things. See, if I have my MySpace working effectively, I'm going to have, you know, Spencer's going to come in and help me out with that. He's going to sit down and manage my MySpace.
Spencer Dobson?
Yes, I'm going to let boundaryless Spencer Dobson into my world even more, so he has more control over things that I do, and I'm sure I'll have those conversations with, like, Spencer, you can't talk for me. You can't tell people that I'm going to show up at their house. You can't do that on MySpace. Anyways, Jim, you seem like you got a lot on your mind tonight. What do you say we spin the old wheel of anger? And today's subject is singing the national anthem in Spanish. Jim?
Gracias, Mark. Antes de que comience, deseo decir que la camisa usted esté desgastando, Marcas.
que usted parece una vaca gorda.
Okay. What?
Okay.
What?
Okay.
All right, look, Jim, it's getting frustrating. I can't understand what you're saying, and we really don't have time for this crap.
Como?
Look, Jim, if you're trying to make the point that even a liberal like me can get annoyed sometimes when immigrants won't speak English, I think you're barking up the wrong tree.
Es divertida usted perdida eso. Usted doc mudo porque usted es tan elegante como un rectangulo desroca schmuck.
All right, look, I don't know what that meant, but I'm pretty sure I heard you call me a schmuck. So now what is your point, Jim?
Here, take this cigar and place it into your anus. Oh, whoops. I forgot to translate that one.
Yeah, you did.
My mistake there, man. Oh, hey, Mark, you know, you ask what this is all about. I'll tell you what this is all about. Mark, all this recent hullabaloo, a Swedish term meaning hubbub, a Swazi word meaning fiddle-faddle, an English word meaning hullabaloo, all this hullabaloo over Mexicans singing the national anthem in Spanish is driving me nuts! A squirrel word meaning, you know...
Yeah, yeah.
Not because I think singing it in Spanish is an insult to America, but because it's an insult to Spain. First, the Mexicans take Mexico away from Spain, then they start singing the American anthem in Spanish. At least they sing it in their own language, for God's sakes.
Spanish is their own language, Jim.
Sure, Mark. You wouldn't tell that to a Klingon, would you? But now on to something even more important. So important that I feel it must be said over the national anthem sung in German. When my ancestors first came here from Germany to farm the Midwest and wipe out the Indians with disease and poor land management, they too, like the proud Mexicans of today, were escaping the hard life of high-quality public schools, state-of-the-art mass transit, and religious tolerance. Millions of these German immigrants settling in barren wastelands we now call Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Iowa. There they forged the network of cities and towns where the passion for drunkenness and funny accents was only equaled by the desire to practice unsustainable agriculture. Then came the big war, WW1. Anti-German sentiment ran wild and names changed. Places like Germantown became Riverside. Townships with names like Baden, Deutsche, and Blame the Jew became Smith Township, Jefferson Township, and Blame the Jew Township. That didn't change much.
Yeah.
And it didn't end there, Mark.
Uh-huh.
In some parts of Kansas, you still can't even say the word schnitzel. What am I trying to say?
I don't know.
This. Our ancestors all came from somewhere else. Whether it be from the proto-utopian haven of high Renaissance Europe like myself, or the primitive backwaters of cannibal-infested Siberia like yours.
What is that?
It really doesn't matter.
Yeah.
What does matter is that we're all equal under the law of this land, just as long as we all know our place and stay there. Until next time, this is Jim Earl saying, you've taken a ride on le ruida de Jim de la Colera. I've been Earl, and you've been Earled.
Let it go. No, let it keep going. I don't want this to be wasted. Put a lot of work into this.
Yeah, wait for it. Man, what a note.
Yeah.
Über das Land von Frieden und das Haus von Tom Ferren.
What happened to that?
Berlin nach Dick.
What happened to the high note, man?
I'm not a eunuch.
Yeah, you're almost there, though. I was waiting to be satisfied by the high note, but you didn't hit it. You didn't hit it.
That was the only note I can't hit.
Hey, where the hell are those AK-47s? Who sold them? What's going on with that? Where are they? Where are those AK-47s, Jim? A 99-ton cache of AK-47s, supposed to be secretly flown from U.S. base in Bosnia to Iraq. They vanished. Four plane loads of AK-47s. You know someone was on the runway going, just give me what you have. How much do you have? Where the hell are they?
Mafia.
This out. It could be. Could be a Russian mafia. Somebody hijacked it. That's exactly what the mafia does. Hijack loads of cargo. Somebody made off with bandits, and this is how. This is why it never ends. There's absolutely no control of the weaponry on this planet. No one has any idea where half the stuff is. This is a lot of guns, dude. Are you kidding me? This is like 200,000 AK-47s. Gone!
That's why Iran needs the nuclear bomb. Yeah. We should let them build nuclear weapons.
Yeah. What do you make of these lists of our phone calls? That they're not taping phone calls, but there's millions and millions of exchanges.
Oh, they have all our records.
I know, but what do you make of that? Is it symbolic in some sort of way? Or does it make you uncomfortable?
Yeah.
I know the idea of identity theft.
I'm more PO'd at Verizon for that kind of crap. You know, that's ridiculous. They have no right to give away that kind of information to anybody. It's against the law.
You're more pissed off at the corporation for being irresponsible than our damn government for spying on us?
I expected of them.
I don't know. You can't trust any of these bastards. I can't trust. I cannot trust any corporation for anything. And this is I'm talking from a guy who literally, when I didn't pay in the old days, if I didn't pay my American Express bill, I thought there was somebody at American Express going, Mark hasn't called or anything. How come? Why we haven't heard from him? Like I literally thought that there was a human component to it all.
There was. He was in India.
Yeah. Well, that's these days. But I find it very disconcerting because they can use it against us no matter what. It bothers me that Sprint does it. I don't even like seeing who I call to my own phone bill.
AT&T, Sprint, Verizon, yeah. Quest, Key West, is that it? They don't do it.
Quest.
They refuse to do it.
Good for them.
Because they were afraid that they would be breaking the law.
They're afraid there's going to be implications after this administration is run out of town by the newly elected Democratic House of Representatives, you mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Then,
if that happens, if the Diebold doesn't ruin the whole election for us.
Yeah? So what do you say move into we've got an interesting sponsor.
And now it's time for this week's disturbing environmental news that'll frighten you, but not enough to really do anything about it. Brought to you by
the good people at Tyson Foods. Hi, I'm Mark Maron. Do you care about the mistreatment of animals, workers, and the environment? Good, because we here at Tyson Foods don't care either. That's why we personally break the beaks off of every one of our chickens before using them as softballs, just so we don't have to hear their plaintive cries for help. Sure, it's extra work. But we want you to know there's practically nothing you or anyone else can do to stop a $26 billion corporation from doing whatever the hell it wants to. Feel impotent? Good. That means we're putting dangerous antibiotics in our chicken again. It's just our way of saying, F*** you. Ah, I love the smell of anhydrous ammonia in the morning. And now, back to this week's disturbing environmental news.
This week, it was revealed the nation's worst polluting oil refinery in Texas, run by BP, has been underreporting toxic emissions. India, the world's biggest producer of fruit, says wild banana species are disappearing. Interior Secretary nominee Dirk Kempthorne says he's going to cure high gas prices by drilling in Alaska and expanding offshore oil wells. And as expected, today, another 200,000 acres of rainforest were destroyed to help stuff your fat, obtuse faces with hamburgers and steaks. Eat well, barbarians. And that was this week's disturbing environmental news that'll frighten you, but not enough to really do anything about it. Brought to you by
the good people at Tyson Foods. Man, I love that anhydrous ammonia. Mmm. That was good stuff.
Man, you love anhydrous ammonia.
Well, you know, I get paid to do those spots, Jim. Just I'm like going to Vegas.
Vegas?
I'm going to Vegas tomorrow, man.
Are you driving?
My wife just keeps, we enjoy having sex in hotel rooms. It's very fun.
Hey, a little too much information.
You know what I mean? Hotel rooms are fun. You can make them dirty, and then you go away for a couple hours, you come back, they're clean.
Yeah.
Just you
except
can
for
do
the
it.
Bed bugs and stuff. But, you know, have a good time.
What do you got to ruin it for? What do you got to be a damn buzzkill for? What are you always buzzkilling me for?
You know what gets rid of bed bugs?
What?
Bagley's best bed bug cleaner.
He sprays it right in his mouth. That's how non-toxic it is.
Right in his mouth.
You can go at the farmer's market here in Los Angeles and watch Ed Begley spray cleaner in his mouth. No one bought it. They're like, did you see that? It's Ed Begley's.
I'm going this weekend.
I'll be back with the short order thing.
Coming up next, Mark Maron's short order news. Remember, do not attempt these jokes at home.
Now he kills bugs dead. Mark Maron.
You spray right in my mouth and it won't hurt me, but it'll kill the bugs. Begley's best.
Bed bug killer.
Begley's best. I apologize. I know that, well, I'm not even going to say that because I'm playing to three people that know that. I can just go erase the blog and no one will know the better. No one will be the wiser.
Oh, the blog.
I don't even know. Are you going to go on the blog
now?
Yeah, I'm
going on the blog right this second.
And you're
going
to make some of those people happy because they now know that what time we tape the show.
Man, it was,
and some of them are blogging as we speak. Maybe perhaps a gypsy or a Z girl or quiet girl. There's already a page two and it's only... I'm not even going to tell what time it is.
Wait a minute. Today's Wednesday, right?
You're all screwy. Today's Thursday, you big lummox. You're a lummox.
Wait a minute. Okay.
I'm exhausted. I did Corolla this morning. I was on his show, and I woke up very early, reminded me of what it was like to wake up and do morning radio and how exhausting that is. But I think I'm going to plow ahead and go to yoga. And I haven't eaten any chocolate. Who cares? I still yelled at my wife the other night, and I need to go to anger management.
Did you make up with her? Did you guys make up? What happened?
Yeah, we're fine, but it's just embarrassing. It's embarrassing, and I don't mean to, you know, confess, but... Someone suggested on the blog that we should do marriage counseling, but it's really my problem. It's a weird outburst anger problem. Like when I have these outbursts, they need to follow through. Like there's very little that's going to stop the momentum until it satisfies it.
Well, and you also need two people though to deal with something like that.
You need a receptor. You need somebody you're going to treat badly to receive. You need that other person to use as an emotional garbage can for your lack of resolution in your life and whatever frustration you may have. It's completely unfair. It's completely unfair.
Here, I'll play Mishnah and you play yourself.
Okay.
And we'll do some role modeling here.
Okay.
Hello, Mark.
Hey, baby.
I am Mishnah.
Hey.
Welcome back to our home.
Oh, well, you know, you've really done a great job with the house, and I really appreciate...
Do you know what I just did?
What?
I wrecked the car.
Aw, oh, baby, that's okay. Car's just a car. As long as you're okay, that's what's important.
By the way,
yeah,
I have been picked up for my own sitcom.
Really?
Yes.
Like, who's doing it?
Myself. I am starring in it, and I have... a year contract.
Well, that's great. Congratulations. Is there any, you think there's a part for me, maybe? Or?
No.
Did you even bring up my name to the people at the sitcom place?
Yes, but they all laughed.
What the hell does that mean? Did you even defend me to the sitcom people?
Sorry, Mark, I have no more time for you or this marriage.
What? Wait a minute. What do you mean you don't have time for the marriage?
It has been nice.
What the hell?
So long, dip
bong. Yeah, well, so long to you too then, damn it. Go ahead, get out. Drive your dumb wrecked car.
Okay, she left about like 2 minutes ago.
How'd I do with that? I don't think I did very well.
No. I
mean, she got a little upset with me because we were talking, like, she doesn't think I portrayed her side very well. She thought that when we talked about her last night that I depicted her as sort of bougie with simple middle class problems, and that's not the case. My wife is not a demanding person, and she's a very creative, very funny, and very giving person, and I don't mean to characterize her as somebody that's, you know, myopic or bougie, all right?
She did use the phrase starter house.
Yes. But I don't think I think she was given it. Like, it didn't come from her. It was passed on to her and then regurgitated by her. And if we continue this conversation, I will not get laid again. Do you understand? There needs to be things that need to be cleared up for reasons that are personal. I can use this platform however I want, damn it, and don't look at me like that.
That's okay. I'm reading the blog.
This is important. What do you got? Anything before I go into
this? The last one says, at least there's a new The Office and The Earl to cheer me up.
Wow.
Oh, I thought that was a reference towards me. Screw that.
No. Dude, that has so little to do with us. I mean, it does occasionally, but it's really just people enjoying their time together. So let them be and listen to this. Here's the Mark Maron Show Short Order News so you can be informed and educated. A McDonald's in Alabama is putting up a bronze bust of Ronald Reagan in its dining room to commemorate the Gipper's 1984 visit. To make things extra fun, when you push the top of his head, you get a large serving of the Gipper's favorite vegetable. Ketchup. The National Security Agency has been secretly collecting the phone call records of tens of millions of Americans using data provided by AT&T, Verizon, and Bell South. Well, at least we know how patriotic Verizon and Bell South are. Apparently, Quest was the only company that didn't comply with the NSA request, as if that Q in their name didn't make them suspicious enough. Huh? And the Q? Huh? Quest. According to U.S. Secret Service logs made public yesterday, disgraced lobbyist Jack Abramoff visited the White House twice, once in 2001 and again in 2004. The logs are an embarrassment to the administration, primarily because it shows Abramoff worked in the White House more than the president did. Kazing! Kapow! Boom! Pow!
Two times.
Pow! Bang! That is the short order news, man. Hey, Truth Seekers, stay tuned. Malloy's coming up, Truth Seekers.
With his recipe for marinated strawberries.
Truth Seekers, we got some marinated strawberries coming your way because this is important. The Bush crime family doesn't make marinated strawberries. Does the Bush crime family eat marinated strawberries? These sons of bitches never eat marinated strawberries, and I don't need it. I don't need them, the damn Bush crime family, the sons of bitches. Do they eat marinated strawberries? They don't, Truth Seekers.
Hello, Mark. I am your wife, Mishna. I am back.
Hey, baby, I'm sorry I yelled at you before.
I forgot and suitcase. See you later.
No, please stay. Please stay. Your
bye-bye, bye, slam.
Damn it! Guys, some marinated strawberries, please. Can I have some marinated strawberries?
I think that worked out well.
It did. Was that Gypsy's recipe?
Yeah, those Gypsy had a...
Gypsy's a truth seeker with marinated strawberries and those sons of bitches in Washington.
Actually, it says macerated, but I don't know what that is. All right. It said marinated.
Good night, sheeple. Stay tuned, truth seekers. He's going to be pissed.